We've had plenty of crunch meetings, or so-called crunch meetings. Why is this one going to be any different?
There's no guarantees that it will be different. As you say, we've had plenty of moments when this thing could have actually gone to a next level and it didn't, and sort of fell adrift in cabinet and fighting over again. However, the difference here is the time really is running out. There's 6 months at the end of this period where the negotiation needs to be over so it can go back to the British Parliament, go back to the European Parliament. Now, March is the end date. That takes us through to the autumn. It means things have really got to be done by sort of October, November time. People take holidays. Parliament's about to start taking its rather, you know, epic summer holiday. Europeans take holidays as well. So you lose quite a few weeks of negotiation. Some people think there are as few as sort of 6 weeks, maybe even 5 weeks left for decent negotiation. At the moment, they can't negotiate with the British government because the British government basically has no position. It cannot arrive at a position, even on quite fundamental issues like the customs union. So this is really Theresa May's last gasp attempt to create some kind of coherent position in time, because if not, things start becoming very chaotic indeed.
Well, we've got what we know of the new customs plan that Theresa May will be putting forward to her cabinet. It certainly looks like something that the EU will not be terribly happy with, but also fundamentally members of her cabinet, both on the sort of the softer Brexit side, but on the hard as well.
It's hard to imagine anyone being happy with it, really. As you say, for the EU, this is cherry picking of the single market, trying to separate goods from services. Now, they've said all along they're not going to do this. It's slightly hypocritical, of course. The EU cherry picks a single market all the time. The EEA agreement, the sort of Norway option that people are always banging on about, that doesn't involve agriculture and fisheries. So it's cherry picking. When the EU says to us, Northern Ireland will be in a separate category, well, that is cherry picking. So they do it. The difference here is that you would basically be allowing a major economy right on your doorstep to undercut you. And the reason for that is essentially there's a lot of services in a good. So if you're bringing out a car, you're going to have an awful lot of legal services that were provided by that company in order to get there. Now, if Britain starts cutting its services, then it can produce that good much, much cheaper, much, much quicker than Europeans would. So they're not going to tolerate it. You're right, they'll say no. For the hard Brexiters, you're keeping us in a good single market. There's lots of regulation that comes with that. They have, for many of them, an almost biblical sense of mission about a full extraction from the EU. And to be honest, for a lot of Remainers, you sort of think, like, well, what exactly is it that you have done here? You've sort of entangled us in one area of our economy. It's not the most of our economy. We're a services economy. We're 80% services. To base the entirety of our economic future on goods seems a very, very strange thing for you to be doing indeed. We'd still suffer lots of the economic ill effects of Brexit. So it's hard, ultimately, to think of anyone who this plan suits, apart from Theresa May. But then she's the Prime Minister, so she's the one that gets to come up with the plans.
Well, with that in mind, then, if this is a plan which no one's going to be happy with, what is going to come out of tomorrow? Because it feels as though either we don't have any decision at all, which, let's be honest, we've had in previous meetings, or someone is going to have to walk.
I don't know whether they'll walk in the end. I mean, there comes a point with, say, David Davis and Boris Johnson, who've made these threats to walk so often. You know, there's the boy cries wolf thing eventually, where you just think, well, look, you haven't done it yet. There's no reason to think you'll do it now. However, massive caveats and health warnings on that. Things never happen until they do. And it is possible that, you know, them or even Liam Fox, who frankly would be made completely redundant, even more redundant than he already is, by virtue of this deal going ahead, because there'd be no role for him securing future trade deals.
To clarify that, so that's to do with the role of him as International Trade Secretary. He's waiting for that Brexit day when he can start actually signing trade deals, basically on tariffs, which the customs deal would be managing.
That's exactly correct. So if Theresa May got her way on this third option, you would be able to do deals on services, on messing around with services overseas, but you couldn't mess around with your tariffs. Now, that is a very weird position for a country like Britain, because Britain basically needs to try to open up other markets in its services. But its only quid pro quo on that is to say, well, look, we're going to reduce our tariffs on things like agricultural goods, you know, sausages or poultry or whatever.
Or potentially immigration.
Yeah, immigration is something else you can bring into those discussions. That's true. I mean, that would be politically quite difficult in the UK right now as well. But even so, it's very hard to do any kind of trade deal with another country unless you can mess around with your tariffs. There's really, and the tariffs will be on agricultural products. That's one of the only areas that's still quite high. So for someone like Liam Fox, there is no function to his role if you know, you're actually signed up, you're harmonized on tariffs, or if there's a very complicated bureaucratic arrangement in the UK about paying back various tariffs, that means that it would be unattractive, you know, to people bringing them in. However, it has to be said, he's had years now, years, to try and do trade deals. He's free to try and negotiate them. The only thing he can't do is sign them. He could be doing that now. Not so much that he could, he should be, because we have plenty of trade deals that we enjoy via the EU. We have a big one with Canada. There's one with Japan that looks like it's about making considerable progress. There's one with South Korea. There's plenty of much smaller trading arrangements with places like China and the US that he needs to secure by the time that we have Brexit Day. And yet he doesn't seem to have made any effort to do so whatsoever. He was rather confident about it at the start. Now he doesn't talk about it. And in fact, most of that stuff has gone over to Brussels to try and convince people to roll them over on our behalf.
In his defence, how can he sign anything if he still doesn't know what the customs and single market regime will be after Brexit?
So, for instance, with these existing trade deals, what he needs to do is try to secure them on the existing terms. He'd want to do that with a kind of breaker clause of, you know, after 5 or 7 years, we could renegotiate these things. But he already knows what the terms are that we would require for those deals. And he knows what the consequences are if he doesn't get them. Because if he doesn't get them, we suddenly have a serious impact on the kind of trade that we can do with countries like South Korea or like Canada. And especially, it has to be said, countries like China and America. And yet there's been very little progress there. Even with these other areas, there are things that you can start doing, preliminary meetings that you can have, where you can secure agreements, quite rough. I mean, you could just say, look, we'll be willing to sort of move things in this area for that, if you'd be willing to open up, let's say, ownership of banks over here. We've seen no progress there whatsoever. So on the basis of his track record, it does not seem a tragedy that he would therefore not be able to further implement these changes on the other side of Brexit.
Fundamentally, where does this actually leave us tomorrow and going into the decreasing number of months until actually Brexit takes place? Are these debates which really are having an impact?
They may well do in the end. There is a sense now, there's a couple of senses. The first one is of time ticking down. The other one is, from some moderate leavers, a sense of real alienation with the government. You're starting to see it with some quite prominent figures of just saying, look, that we can't keep on pretending that this isn't a shambles. It doesn't mean that they've gone off the idea of Brexit. They haven't at all. But they're starting to think, well, look, something needs to change here. Like, something needs to happen to change the course that we're on right now, because it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Theresa May, however, still has a very powerful argument that she can make to both sides. To the Brexiters, the hardline Brexiters, she says, look, you either sign up to my compromise, or there's a really good chance that Brexit won't happen, because there's no plan there right now. We are going to have to either extend Article 50 we'll cancel this thing altogether unless you guys get on board with this compromise arrangement and stop acting, you know, so stroppy and biblical about the whole thing. To the soft Brexiters and to the Remainers who are unhappy with the stuff, she can say, look, it's either my compromise deal or it's going to be a no deal Brexit. You know, if we don't come up with some kind of thing, we're still going to leave, you know, in March 2019, there'll be nothing in place. You won't be able to import radioactive isotopes for cancer. You won't be able to have any aviation treaties, let alone the impact on customs or anything else. So these two twin horrors of both sides, which is the extreme version of the other camp, she can wield as an argument saying, look, you've got to sign up to my compromise agreement. What happens then, assuming she can make that kind of two-sided, internally contradictory propaganda effort work, is then rather complicated. Because even if she does get everyone on board on that, she then takes it to Brussels and Brussels will say, no, absolutely not, we're not doing this. The best thing she can hope for is that it takes 2 or 3 weeks for them to say that, because it just buys her a little bit more time. And what Theresa May is interested in right now is surviving day to day without this thing detonating the Tory party from within. So she manages to get to a position where it's united behind her in cabinet, and she earns another 2 or 3 weeks with the Europeans before they say no, she will consider even that moderate achievement to be a huge success.
And for the rest of us watching all this take place, what is your actual gut feeling here? What do we end up with?
We are in the process now of the last moments of moderate compromise arrangements being possible. And if in the next few weeks there is no success in one of these compromise arrangements, and I have to say at the moment, it is almost impossible to see how there could be, given the negotiating position of the EU and given the negotiating position of the British government and the forces within the British government, especially on the hard Brexit side, who are ultimately pushing for a no deal. If that doesn't happen, then we start looking at the two extreme options, and we'll know them in the autumn. And those options are no Brexit or no deal. And we would either be leaving without a deal or we wouldn't be doing Brexit at all. Those are the two extreme options. We will know ultimately, really, we're talking about sort of the next 2 months, really, maybe the next three at most, whether these compromise arrangements will come forward. At the moment, they don't look likely to survive. And if they don't, things become very, very volatile indeed, and they could go either way.
Those are both options which, aside from a few extreme parties on both sides, no one is really going to be happy with because of the rifts and the chaos that they would create. Just looking at the EU's perspective, it has a history of last-minute fudges. Can you really see it getting to that stage?
Yes. It's strange, and you're right, that their normal negotiating tendency is to leave it to the last minute. They usually do this with their 7-year financial plans. Everyone has a massive fight. And then eventually they, you know, in the sort of 3, 4 a.m., they all come out looking bleary-eyed with some kind of hastily scribbled down pieces of paper. I don't imagine that will happen this time. The stakes are too high. Ultimately, if it's about letting Britain be in a goods-only single market, that is the end of the single market. That it would not survive that kind of compromise. It basically would open the doors to all kinds of countries asking for a bespoke pick-and-choose single market. And the entire purpose of the single market, you know, clues in the name, is that it is single. That is what allows it to function. That's why goods and services and everything else can cross borders as if they weren't there. And it's proved hugely economically beneficial to the continent, to pretty much every single member of the continent. It's impossible to imagine them doing it. And then you look on the British side and you think, it's impossible really to imagine them signing up to the single market in its entirety and the customs union in its entirety. There's very little support for that on the British side. So at the moment, those two positions look like rocks smashing together. So could it get to the end where all of those compromise arrangements have been put to one side and it comes down to either no Brexit or no deal? Yeah, I think it really could. And which way that would go is pretty much anyone's guess, because it would be an extremely chaotic, very, very volatile moment in which personality and personal loyalties and all of the really frenzied attributes of the Commons at moment of hyper political drama, all of those will come to the fore. And, you know, you'd be a braver man than I to make a prediction about which way it would go.